we started our discussion yesterday about the Brisker Rav, trying to understand his Derech HaLimud and to what extent he followed in the footsteps of his father of Chaim. And we were up to page 80. I have here the copies that we gave out yesterday. And he has an entire discussion here about Psul Kodshim. And basically the thesis here is that Rebbe Velvel was very interested in the concept of, well, shall we say, the structure of Din Kloli Din Mesuyam, something that we've been discussing many times in the past about a specific din or a principle that applies here and a universal din that applies everywhere. We also spoke about the fact that the Brisker Rav was interested in the action and to what extent the action generates the chaloshev, you know, the halachic status, or to some extent it's not the action per se but the change or the transition that a person or an object goes through, and a new status change. Here he has a sugya in Masecht Zvachim, Adaf Tezayin Amid Beis. So again, if you have the handouts, we're on page 80, in the middle of the paragraph, Ulech Shem Nedagdek. And the Gemara speaks about a behemas kodshim ein tumino heges. Now what this sounds like is saying is that a behemas kodshim cannot be mekabel tuma insofar as it's kodshim. But if you look at Rashi, Rashi gives you an entirely different impression. Rashi says, in Zvachim, he says, di'ein mishum di'ein ha-behema mekabels tuma mechayim, which means that a live animal is not makabel tuma. We know the kelim are makabel tuma. Certain things are so susceptible to tuma. An animal is not, as long as it's alive. Of course, when it becomes an avail, it's tummy, but as long as it's alive, it's not tummy. So avail doesn't understand. The Gemara seems to assume that because it's a behemas kachim, and it's a specific character of this behema, it's not just a regular behema, but it's kachim, therefore it's not makabel tuma. Rashi says that it's not makabel tuma because it's a balchai. A balchai is not makabel tuma, whether it's chulin or whether it's kodshim. So how does Rashi justify this statement of the Gemara that ein behemas kodshim makabel is tuma? So in order to answer this question, which is a very difficult question, Rav Velvel says the following. Let's ask a different question theoretically. Again, in the theoretical world, if you can find a case where a behema balchai would be mekabelas tuma, nevertheless, in addition to the fact that it's tameh, there's another halacha in kodshim which is called psul kodshim, meaning there are many different categories that would disqualify behema from kodesh. From, let's say, Shechit al Gabi Mizbeach. One of them is called Tuma. So now, we could talk about Tuma in a Behemas Chulin, and that would certainly apply to a Behemas Kodshim as well. Is it Makabel Tuma, is it not? But then you have to ask a different question. That's a unique question in Hilchas Kodshim, whether or not it's Tame, and that's relevant above and beyond the universal classical dinim of Tuma. It's relevant because it generates a psul in the kodshim, which means that it's disqualified for the mizbeach.
Is it Tuma deraisa?
Well, we're not yet up to that point yet. In other words, at this point we're just asking in theory whether or not there is an additional dimension to Tuma with regard to Hegdish. Because again, we're looking to see why the Gemara has to be mechadish this bombastic chiddush that there's no tumah in a behemah's kodshim. I mean, there's no tumah in behemah because insofar as it's a balchai. So Rav Velvel is already leading us down a path, and he's saying that the Gemara's discussion is not about classical tumah, but rather about psul tumah, which is unique and specific to karbanos, to kodshim. And he says the following. We have a principle that all psulim, we'll mention a few categories, are only after his kachus hakarban, right? In other words, you can never have a situation in the world of kodshim where an animal has not yet been sanctified, and already you can impose upon the animal a psul. Let's take, for example, the classical case of the pigul. Pigul means that when the Kohen shechted the animal, he had the wrong machshava. Obviously, that's after the behemah was behemah's kodshim. Otherwise, there's no such thing as pigul. Or, for example, nosar. Let's say the animal was shechted, and the emurim, everything that had to be brought out of the mizbeach was brought, and now we have the basar that has to be eaten, whether it's eaten by the Kohen, eaten by the Baal of Yisrael, and there's a time allotment. If that time allotment passes by, then it becomes nosar. And you can go on and on and on, and you'll find that what's common to all psulei kodshim is that they're all chal, they all emerge halachically only after shechita. In other words, you already sanctified the animal, and then you went ahead and you did the first of the avodos, which is shechita, then it could be a psul. Chutzum komo, and chutzus mano, and you can have a psul tumo, you can have a psul, you could have a psul of pigul, nosar, whatever list you have. Oh. But when it comes to psul tuma, there are two psukim. Look at these two psukim. One pasuk says the following. You see, he bolded it, so it's very easy to find it. V'habasar asher yiga b'chol tomei lo ye ochel. Just like you're not allowed to eat nosar and you're not allowed to eat pigul, and these are all under separate lavim, there's also a separate lav of not eating kodshim shenitmu, which is tomei is also a psul, like nosar and like pigul. However, here the Torah went out of its way to use the word vehabasar. And Chazal tell us in the Gemara in Tzvachim that basar is coming to say velo behema bechayeha, that the psul of tuma is only chal after the animal became basar. Now, when does the animal, obviously, right, when does the animal shift from being a behemah to being basar? Only after shechita. So it means that the word va'basar is coming to tell you that there's no psul tuma when it's alive, you know, when it's walking on 4 feet, because at that point it's not basar. So therefore, he's ready now for the breakthrough. Now the breakthrough is a sugya in chulin. You'll take a look at the footnote number 64 on the bottom. And the Gemara says in Chulin that Ashochei Behemot Me'ol Li'akum. Okay, now we're talking about the prohibition of Avodah Zarah. So he shechted a Behemot Me'ol for the sake of idol worship. That's one of the automatic psulim of that engender the Isra of Avodah Zarah is the Shechita. So any Shechita of an animal that was done L'shem Avodah Zarah generates the Iser of Avodah Zarah. U'mefarcheses mitama tumas ochlin aval lo tumas nevelos ad shetomus. In other words, there's some element of tuma that can be incurred with shechita even before the animal is technically dead. Anybody know what that's called? Mefarcheses. Mefarcheses means that the animal is dead but not dead, meaning it's dead but it's still jumping around, and until it drops dead mamish, so there might be an Isur of Eber Menachah. You have to see exactly what the status of the animal is.
Doesn't behemoth sometimes mean a non-kosher species?
Correct. Here it means a non-kosher species, because again, the animal can't be a behemoth mea mechayim, right? He's shechting a live animal. It must be that we're talking about a behemoth tmei in the species. But the interesting thing is that now he's talking about tuma, whether it's tumas ochlin, tumas nevela, and he's saying that you can already have a tumas ochlin immediately following the shechita before the animal is dead, because the animal is to some extent still alive. That's called mefarcheses. Now, what does Rav Elba want to get from this whole discussion in the Gemara Chulin? He says that in the Gemara Chulin Balei Chayim She'eino Mekablim Tuma, why is it that we say that a live animal is not Mekabel Tuma? Hareza lo mipnei shemichayim ein din tuma. It's not that an animal that's alive is excluded, completely mufka from tuma. Elo mipnei shemichayim ein lem toras ochel. So again, it's not a new positive personality trait. What word am I looking for? A character of the substance of a live animal. It's not that there's a stira here, there's some contradiction between the fact that the animal is alive and the din of tumah. That's not true, as we'll soon see from this Gemara in Chulin that we saw. But rather, there's a different halacha over here. And that is that we're lacking one of the preconditions, the positive preconditions, for Kabbalah's tumah. And what is that? For example, you have kelim amakabal tumah, ochlim, foodstuffs amakabal tumah. But the animal is not called neither a kli nor an ochel as long as it's alive. Like, that's why animals are muktzah on Shabbos, by the way, because the antithesis of muktzah is either a kli or an ochel. An animal is neither of the above. It has the same status as eitzim v'avonim, and that's why it's muktzah. So the animal cannot become tamei because it's not an ochel. Umimela ain't makabalim tumah. So the animal is not makabal tumah. Oh. So again, this is very interesting. Let's just review. Rav Velva's insight is that the law that the relationship, shall we say, between tumah and Bali Chaim is not that one excludes the other, but rather we're lacking one of the positive conditions that has to be met to categorize something as being susceptible to tumah. And that is an ochel. So since the Balei Chayim are not considered ochlin, therefore cannot be makabel tumah. Now, it's interesting that once the animal is shechted, then it's considered an ochel, even though it's still alive. So you follow my point. So there's no contradiction between the animal being alive and being makabel tumah. The problem is that once it's alive, it doesn't have a shame ochel. If Liyatsuyer, it could still be alive, but it would have a shame ochel, then Eyokhidavi would be Makabal Tumah. And what case do I have in mind? Mefarcheses. The Mefarcheses is still alive, but that's not a steer to the Din Tumah. The problem is that if it's alive, it's not an ochel, but yet Mefarcheses, paradoxically, is an ochel, and therefore it's Makabal Tumah's ochel. The Yishal Efo, Lama Zebehemas Kodshim, Eino Makabelis Tumah. Oh. Now we have a status or a category called Chibas Kodesh, which is called Chibas Kodesh Machshir L'Kabel Tumah. In other words, in Kodshim, you have an ability for the Kodshim to be susceptible to Tumah, whereas had it been Chulin, it would not be susceptible to Tumah. And that's called Chibas Kodesh. Okay, let's say, for example, only Kalim and Ochlin on Makabal Tumah, and yet the Gemara establishes that Eitzim and Lavona, which are neither Ochlin nor Kalim, are Makabal Tumah. Why is that so? And that's called Chibas HaKodesh. It's very interesting, there's a paradox here, because the more something is holy, the more susceptible it is to Tumah. But that's a shiur for Ashkofa. You know, it's very interesting how that, you know, the holier. That's why Klal Yisrael has certain dini tumah that don't apply to goyim. Are you with me on that? Because the greater the kedusha, the more susceptible, more vulnerable you are to the opposite of kedusha, which is tumah. In any event, there's something called chibas kodesh, which in the case of kodshim, it circumvents the prerequisites for kabbalah's tumah, and therefore you could have something like a tree. Right, Eitzim, so you magdish the Eitzim l'marocha, l'mizbeach, and even though it's neither a kli nor an ochel, yet it's makabel tumah, that's called chibas hakodesh. And if that be the case, then why is it that the Gemara establishes, as we saw at the very beginning in Zvachim, that behemus kodshim ain't a makabelis tumah? What are you going to tell me? It's neither an ochel nor a kli, who cares? It should be makabel tumah midin chibas hakodesh. Chibas HaKodesh means the very fact that it has Kedusha to it, that elevates it to a higher status, which makes it vulnerable and susceptible to Tumah. And the answer is, Lo Matzinu Chibas Kodesh, El b'makom shatuma poseles. Okay, this really gets complicated. But if you're with me, you can follow it. But you have to stay with me. Okay, he adds another link to this equation, and that is that when does chibas kodesh kick in, and something that's neither a kli nor an ochel could be makabel tuma because it's kodesh, that's only when there's a psul tuma. You remember that I said that something that's kodesh is makabel tuma, even though it doesn't fulfill the requirements, the general universal requirements of what is susceptible to tuma. That's called hegdesh, chibas hakodesh. But that's only because tuma is a poselis. In other words, we said that tuma has two, how do you say in English, two accomplishments. There are two accomplishments to tuma. One has to do with tuma in general, and the other has to do with psul kodshim. And the chivas hakodesh only applies where there could be a psul kodshim. So, for example, if you have atzei maracha, then through the vehicle of tuma of chivas hakodesh, they will be susceptible. They'll be kabel tuma. But why? Because it's a psul tuma, which means I can no longer bring these atzei maracha on the mizbeach as a result of the psul tuma. And if you remember, we mentioned that with regard to behema, then we have psule tuma like nosar and pigul. I'm sorry, psule kodshim like nosar and pigul, but they only apply when after shechita, correct? And we saw now the pasuk says va'abasar, so that now we have the following very sensitive scenario. It's almost paradoxical. Chivas hakodesh should have converted the behema even bichayeha to being susceptible to kabbalas tuma. However, right, when you have chivas kodesh, meaning it's hegdesh. However, kabbalas tuma in this case is only a result of psul tuma. Now, when it comes to the psul tuma with regard to kodeshim, I'm talking about kodeshim mizbeach that have to be shechted and brought on the mizbeach. There's a principle of bebasar. Bebasar means only after shechita. So a behema bechayel could, even though it's kodeshim, could not be mekabel tuma, even though chivas hakodesh would circumvent the fact that it's no longer, that it's neither an ochel or a kli. And why? Because it's hegdesh. But that process, the mechanics, the mechanism by which you could be the levono or the eitzim arach could be mekabel tuma is because of the psul tuma. So then now, if you can ask me the question with behemas kodshim, why can't it be makabel tuma midin chivas hakodesh? The answer is because there's no psul tuma. And why is there no psul tuma? Because when the Torah talks about psulim in general, all psulim is be'ach, the Torah says ube basar asher yiga b'chol tomei lo yochel, which means it's got to be basar after shechita. So if you have basar kodesh after shechita, then the tumah would passel it. Avol b'balechayim, because it's before va'basar, and that limud tells me that there's no psul tumah as long as it's alive before shechita. She'edam psulim lekodesh ad liachas shechita lo nisrabu mi limud. So we have no ribui to say that balechayim could become tamei and posel before shechita. We're left with the posel with basar. Is memela. Now we can answer up Rashi. Rashi gives us two reasons why balechayim are not makabel tuma. One is ikabolas tuma, and the other is heder psulasam, and that's really one din. So let's go back to the Rashi that we began with. The Gemara says that behemas kodshim ain tuma no heges bahem. So Rashi says, Mishum she'ena behema makabelas tuma michayim. Why does Rashi quote that? That's not relevant to behemas kodshim. That's a general halacha that an animal is not a kli, it's not an okel, and if it's not makabel tuma, as long as it's alive. The answer is that we need two stages here to explain why tuma is not relevant to behemas kodshim. First of all, we have to say that the general kabbalas tuma can't apply to behemas kodshim. And that's because it's no law, it's not an ochel nor a kli, it's only a balchai. But that's not enough. Now we have to ask ourselves the question, what about Chibas HaKodesh? That Behemoth Kodshim is Makabel Tuma, even though it's neither this nor that. The answer to that is because you need a Psul Tuma. And there's no Psul Tuma in the case of Behemoth Balichayim because of what? Because of the Pasuk of Ubasar. It's got to be after Shechita. So we might have shot the Behemoth Kodshim. It doesn't have tumah. It doesn't have tumah mitzad the universal halakha of tumah, which should apply to Behemoth Kodesh as well. But because it's a bal chai, there's no kabbalah's tumah. And number two, and even if you'll ask me, well, what about the din, the specific din in kodeshim of chibas hakodesh? The answer is that there's no psul of tumah bebasar before shechita.
From what point would levayna or eitzim?
For the moment you magnish it. Because for the moment you magnish it, you have a chiv v'akrov al gami mizbeach. And if any of the psuli mizbeach will set in, you can no longer bring it on the mizbeach. The chiddush here is that if let's say a sheretz falls on the atzim arocha, now you can no longer bring the atzim arocha on the mizbeach because of the psul tumah. You'll ask me, but there's no Kabbalah's Tumah in the case of an Eitz. An Eitz is never Makabel Tumah, correct? It's only Kli Eitz can be Makabel Tumah if it has certain dimensions, whatever. But not Eitz itself. So the answer is Chibas HaKodesh. And somehow, you know, when you elevate it to the status of Hekdesh. So here we see that there is such a thing as something which is neither this nor that, and yet it's Makabel Tumah through the vehicle via Chibas HaKodesh. Why not apply that to Bali Chaim? But the answer is because that halach of Chibas Kodesh is fundamentally rooted in the psul, the psul tumal of his bach, whatever the psul is. It doesn't matter what the psul is. And here we have halach of Mubasar, that the psul can't set in because the Torah says that psul, any psul, can only be chal in a behema after it becomes basar, after shechita. Now Rav Zevin is very excited about this, not just because of the Torah itself, but because of the Shitas HaLimud. Rav Zevin sees in this analysis of the Brisker Rav a classical case of the Derech of the Brisker Rav. What the Brisker Rav wants to always do is he wants to take two halachos, two regulations or rules, I call them klolim, and justify and explain why they overlap. The interface or the overlap of these two rules, of these two klolim, is typical of Rav Velvel. So we have a general halach in Bali Chaim that they're not makabel tumah, because they're neither this nor that. And now we have a specific halach in Chibas HaKodesh, in Hegdish, Behemoth Hegdish, it's not makabel tumah. And we need both. And they merge into one explanation. That's typical of the Brisker Rav. And then he goes on to say the following. Okay, now we should be on page 81. Just one second. Just want to see where we can start, because... Okay. Right, I'm just looking for the right place to start. Okay. So about halfway through page 81... you'll be able to identify, I hope, a sentence that the first word in the line is kach, if that helps, about 15 lines down from the top, and then a sentence at the end of that line that starts kshulomid bezvachim. Okay, and here we're starting with the sugya, which he notes here in footnote number 66 in zvachim daf kuf zayin. This is after Rav Zevin gives a whole background as to why Rav Velvel used to teach Kodshim. What was unique about Kodshim? And just to, again, to give it to you just in a nutshell, and I think we mentioned some of this yesterday, that Rav Velvel was not into giving shiurim, you know, in the classical, like if you go to a yeshiva today, you get something called a shir klali. I don't know if you ever heard of that phrase. Like I learned in a yeshiva called Beis HaTalmud, the Rav Shiva was Rav Velvel Schwarzman, so he gave a shir klali once a week, and the whole yeshiva would attend. And the classical structure, Rav Beryl was actually an exception to the rule, but the classical structure or format for a shir klali was to give you the whole kitchen sink and take five different mesechtas or twice that amount and connect them together. by asking a barrage of questions and finally one yisod to answer them all. Have you ever seen that? Shir Kloli?
Correct. After Mincha, yeah.
Oh, that, I don't remember what it was, but that was typical. They say about Rav Yisrael Salanter, people don't realize what a Lamdan he was. You know, he's known for the Musa movement, but he was a great Talmud Chacham. And they say that one time, I don't know if somebody did this deliberately, they took a whole pile of Sfarim off his desk right before he came in for the Shia, and they hid them. And imagine he had prepared a Shia Kloli with a whole pile of Sfarim. And they say that he walked in without hesitating. He said a whole shiur on a different topic and connected many, many different sectors without access to any of his notes and any of his svarim that he had prepared. But that was the shiur klol. You know, can I bamboozle you and overwhelm you with more and more quotes? The Brisker Rav was not like that. He didn't give shiur klol. He used to learn with the kibbutz. The kibbutz was a group of bachrim, and they would learn daf al daf. And he would give you a deeper insight into the daf. I was zochah to learn chavrusa one summer with Rav Moshe Chorsky, Zecher Tzadik V'Kodesh Levrach. We learned together Perek HaZov. He was so much like the Brisker Rav, who would have been his great uncle or whatever. I lose the connection there. You know. Anyway, because his pshat, he was always learning pshat. And if you listen carefully to what Moshe was saying, there were always insights into the pshat, even if he didn't ask the cash of the terrace. That's what Revelva was all about. In any event, so there's halacha that makabel dom b'chutz pot. We have a din of chutz, meaning avodas chutz generates a chi of karis. Now there are four avodas. So the first one is called shchita, and following shchita there's something called kabbalas adam. You take a kli shoreis and you receive the dam. Now, just like Shkutei Chutz, according to Chachamim, not Rav Shimon disagrees, but it generates a chiyuv kares. So logically, you and I would have concluded that Kabbalah's Domim, insofar as one of the four avodos, would also generate a chiyuv of Chutz. But the Gemara says that Makabal Domim is pot. Why? Because the two avodos that were singled out for shchutei chutz, or I shouldn't say for an iser chutz, were shchita and zrika. Those are the main two avodos. There's another avoda called holachas adam. But holachas adam is not really an avoda. I mean, it's counted in the four because of maybe machsheves pigul, it's machlokas tanoim, but it's not a real avoda. So the only real avoda that we have to focus our attention on is Kabbalah Saddam. And if the Kabbalah Saddam took place outside of the Azara, which, if I understand correctly, it means he engineered it in such a way that he shechted the behemoth right on the, let's say, on the border of the Azara, and then he was able to be Makabal the Dam and a Kli Shoreis outside the boundaries of the Azara, he's pot. Why? Because we never equate Kabbalah with Shechita and Zrika. So when the Torah singles out Shechita and Zrika for Chutz, that's because these are the two main avodos, but not Kabbalah Saddam, and for sure, and how much more so, not Halacha Saddam. Okay, fine. Now, Rashi in Zvachim, at the very beginning of the Masechta, says that the reason why we don't equate Kabbalah Saddam with Shechita and Zrika is because Kiblo Bachutz Eino Chayv Kores Mishnei Deshchiti Dechsiv L'Chiyuva Uzrika Nafka Midam Yechoshev. So in other words, Rashi is saying that we have two Yalfuses, one for Shchita in the Parsha of Chutz and the other for Zrika. Okay, right now I have no kashas on Rashi, everything seems smooth. We have no limud to derive Kabbalah. There are two yalfuses. One refers to Shechita and the other to Zrika. Says the Brisker Rav, HaKavana, what does Rashi mean, again, on a more profound level, is Shalmaisa Kabbalah upotu b'chutz avaloshe donim kan liftar al Kabbalah b'toras avoda. So he says the following, that when we talk about Kabbalah Saddam, it hides, it conceals two different dimensions that are distinct one from the other. One is the Maisa Kabbalah, the actual physical action of receiving the Dam, and the other is the Avoda, as one of the four Avodas of Kabbalah Sadam. He says the following: in the cases of Shechita and Zrika, Yechayev B'chutz. Why you chayev for chutz? Shechita chutz, Zrika's chutz. So you and I would have said, because he did the Avodas HaKorban B'chutz. Says the Brisker of that can't be, because if that be the case, we should apply that by equation to the case of Kabbalah Sadam, David.
Does chutz mean outside?
Outside the Azor.
And what's the Azor?
The Azor is the holy part where the Mizbeach stood, and that's where all the Avodah had to be done. There's even a holier part that's inside the Azor, in the inner chambers, that's called the Kodesh Kadoshim. But the barest minimum for Shechitas Kodshim and all the Avodahs is inside the Azor. I mean, there are different dinim in Zeroyim where the Torah considers the entire Yerushalayim to be like the Azor. Like, for example, Achilas Maaser Sheni, and so on and so forth. That's only in Zeroyim. In Kodshim, the key of keys is the Azor.
Was it Kodshim Kalim? Can be eaten in the carbon paste?
Could be eaten. No, but I'm talking about the Avodah. The Avodah has to be done inside. The Mishnah describes the Azor on Erev Pesach, it was full of dam from all the Shechitas HaPesachim, you know what I'm saying, up to the knees. So that's now we have a severe violation if you do the Avodah B'chutz. Now, what's Avodah? Well, we start with Shechita. The Pasuk says in Shechita, what was the Pasuk again? I forget the Pasuk for a second. El Pesach o El Moed lo yaviu. Okay, that's Shechita. And then we have another pasuk for the Zrika, which is called Dam Yechashev. So if we had time, we'd go through the parashas inside. But the basic question is, what's common to these two? Why would they both engender a chiyuv for chutz? And the answer is because they're both avodas. Says the Brisker of that can't be it. Because if the avoda itself, the Torah's Avodah, what we call the Shem Avodah, is what engenders the Psul of Chutz, the Isur Chutz, then that shouldn't be extended to apply to Kabbalah as well. Kabbalah is an Avodah. And yet we know that Kabbalah cannot be derived from these two cases. Why not? They belong to the same team. They're members of the same set. And the answer is, because we made a mistake over here. We thought that Shechita and Zrika are Chayim on Chutz because of the Shem Avodah. No. It's not like that. And Haraya, you're not chayav for chutz in the case of Kabbalah Sadam. Ella? But rather, as we said before, every avoda has two dimensions to it. It's the Shem avoda, in terms of the Hekshar Karbon, and so on, leading up to Zrika Sadam. And it's the Maisa. So the Torah says that for that Maisa Shechita of Kodshim Bachutz, you're chayav. For that Maisa of Zrika Sadam Bachutz, you're chayav. However, when we get to Kabbalah Sadam, that's neither a Maisa Shechita nor a Maisa Zrika. Harish Limud Kloli Al Kol Avodos V'El Pesach Ol Mod Lo Yivienu Kol Aboli Ol Mod Chayovin Ale Bachutz. So the Brisker wants to prove his point. He says, wait a minute, you're Chayov Bachutz based on the Pasuk El Pesach Ol Mod Lo Yivienu, meaning anything that requires the Azara, if you take it outside, you're chayev. And the Gemara, which you'll see here in number 67, that's Kuf Tes of an Alf in Zvachim, derives from this pasuk that even in the cases of Nisuch Hayayin, you're chayev for chutz. So let's say, for example, you stood outside the Azara and you poured the Yayin over the Mizbeach, you'd be chayev for that. He gives another example in Menachos. There's something called Kmitza. Kmitza Menachos is what Zrika is in Behemoth Kodesh. And let's say you did the Kmitza of the Mincha outside the Azor, you'd be chayav for that. Now, if that be the case, then why not apply? Why does the Gemara need a special pasuk to include Shechita and Zrika? Shechita and Zrika are included in El Pesach Ol Moed Lo Yivienu. They're not inferior to Nisuch Hayayin or Kvitza Menachos. is lama hutzrachnu b'dam l'limud miyuchad shal dam yichashiv. Ella shebedam chayov al zrikaso, because the machayev of chutz in the case of dam is the maisa zrika. It's not the avoda. If it was the avoda, then certainly it would come under the general halacha of kol abal yol moed chayev lo b'chutz. And now the Brisker Rav, this is already beyond our purview for today, but he goes ahead and he says the nafkamina between calling it an avoda, which already we know and we derive from kolaboli olmoed chayev lebachutz, and the new chiyuv that's engendered by the maisa zrika. So those are nafkaminas that we have to, that has to be ironed out, but it's not for us now. Oh, if this be the case, then we can answer Tosus's kasha. So again, let's just go over what we said. Rashi says the reason why there's no chiv chutz in Kabbalah Saddam is because the Torah, in the case of Shechita, has a special pasuk for chutz, and the Torah, in the case of Zrika Saddam, has a special pasuk. So Rav Velvel asks, who cares if there's a special pasukim? There's a separate halacha of avoda. Anything that's classified as an avoda has an isur chutz. No, we misunderstood Rashi. Rashi is saying that forget about the avoda and the status of the avoda. There's a separate machayev of chutz in the maisa shchita and the maisa zrika. And in Kabbalah Saddam, there's no such pasuk that tells you that there's a special iser of chutz by virtue of the maisa Kabbalah Saddam. And now he wants to answer Akasha of Tosfos. This is way, way, way into Masechta Zvachim, like at the end of Masechta Zvachim, that there's a special limud, liftar Kabbalah b'chutz, that Yalfus is called Maha Loshu Gmar Havoda, of Kolshu Gmar Havoda. Kabbalah Saddam is only a preparatory stage to what? To Zrika Saddam. And based on this limud, if a person receives the dam, the Kohen receives the dam outside the Azorah, he's potter. So Tosfos says, why does the Gemara assume that the Ptur of Kabbalah B'chutz requires this Yalfus? So why don't you just say we can't derive it neither from Shechita nor from Zrika, as Rashi said? Says the Brisker Rav, the Gemara needs a special pasuk to exclude Kabbalah Saddam as an avoda regard to the chiyuv of chutz. We need a different explanation to justify why there's no chiyuv chutz for the maisa Kabbalah Saddam. And for that, we need the fact that there were only two yalfuses, one for shchita and one for zrika. Okay, now we turn to page 82. Now, you have to go, Daniel?
Yeah.
Go ahead, then, you go. So now, what we have here is an analysis of the Brisker Rav in terms of Din Klali and Din Mesuya. And this has to do with the halacha of Ksiva Sefer Torah. As you and I know, there's a certain Mesorah, a tradition, which is a verbal oral tradition. It's not written anywhere. Now it's written because we wrote down, we committed all our halachas to writing, but back in the day, there was a Mesorah. Mesorah means a transmission from mouth to mouth, from Rebbe to Talmud, as to how to write a Sefer Torah. Right? There are certain words that could be chaser, could be without a yud, or sometimes it's with a yud, spelling issues, sometimes a different shape for a letter, it has to be longer or smaller. You know what I'm talking about? Like Vayikra, the Aleph of Vayikra, all sorts of things that go in the Mesorah. We'll soon see, as we go through page 82, that the Rambam omits all the dinim of Mesorah. In other words, when the Rambam took it upon himself to codify the halacha, and he wrote 14 books, which are called the Yad HaChazaka, or the Mishnah Torah, he did not accept upon himself to write a special section about the Mesorah. Somebody has to write a book on that topic. The Rambam says, that's not for me. Okay, fine. Now, one of the words in Megillas Esther is Vaizasa. Vaizasa is, if I remember correctly, one of the 10 sons of Haman. Does that make sense? Okay.
That's correct.
Now, If you'll count down from the top of this paragraph on page 82, about 10 lines, you'll see that this halacha, that the vav, which is the first letter of the word vaizasa, has to be written very long. So next time you're reading a Megillah, take a look inside the Megillah Esther, and you'll notice that vaizasa is a longer vav, what we call. And the Rambam omits this halacha. So Rav Velma wants to know, why does Rambam omit this halacha, which is such an important halacha, in Ksivas HaMegillah, established by the Gemara in Megillah Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis? Says Rav Velma Tzvei Dinim. Now we see Rav Velma following the footsteps of his father. With regard to writing the Megillah, there are certain dinim that reflect Kisvei HaKodesh, because Megillah says is one of the 24 holy books of the Holy Writ, and therefore all the laws that govern Kisvei HaKodesh and how to write them and how to make shittim and parchment and so on, all those laws apply to Megillah says like they do to the other 23 books of Kisvei HaKodesh of Tanakh. But then he says there are certain dinim that were established by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah that are specific and unique to Megillas Esther. In order to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Megillas Esther, the Megillah has to be written in a certain way. So for that, the Brisker Rav, to prove that, he quotes a Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Tes Vav. And it says there in Rashi, Pirush Rashi, Mipnei Shlo Nitna Nevua Likasev B'chutz Laretz. Now, in other words, we have a heter and even an obligation to commit Nevua to writing. And that's the Kisvei HaKodesh, that's Torah Shebichtav. But what's common to all the Divrei Nevua in Tanakh, again, I'm not talking about Moshe Rabbeinu right now, is that all this Nevuah was in Eretz Yisrael. You familiar with that? It makes a big deal about this in the Kinnis for Tisha B'Av is Rabbi Yehuda Levi, you know, the author of the Sefer HaKuzari, that there's no Nevuah in Chutz Laretz. There may be Nevuah in Chutz Laretz, but it's not going to be committed to writing in part of the Tanakh. No, but the question is, what about Esther? Esther is written in Chutz Laretz, in Paras.
In Bavel, right?
In Bavel. And it says in a sefer called Seder Olam, which is a very early book that gives you the chronology of events, it says, Sheba Osuzman, Lashana Bar Kosmos Megillus Esther. Notice when the Pasuk says, Vatiftov Esther, it means that she was able to write a Megillah with all the dinim of Megillah in Chutz Laretz. So the Brisker Rav asks, how do we reconcile that with the fact of Lo Nitna Nevuah Likasev B'Chutz Laretz? She was in Chutz Laretz, and now writing her Nevuah down, or any Nevuah down in Chutz Laretz, would disqualify for being part of Kisvei HaKodesh. So the Brisker Rav draws a mathematical conclusion here. A very sensational one, and that is Ella Shaladin Kisvei HaKodesh Tzrichin Dafka Nevuah Sechel Avol Stam Ksiva LeMitzvasa Shaloya Hei Kori Kikori Bal Peh Ze Shaych Af B'Chutz Laretz. This is the Tzvei Dinim, you know, of Reb Chaim, but here's the Brisker Rav. Meaning, there are two dinim here. One din is that you're not allowed to read Tanakh Bal Peh. Another din is that Kisvei HaKodesh have that status because they were written in Eretz Yisrael and not in Chutz Laretz. When the Gemara analyzes Vatichtov Esther, it's from the perspective not of Kisvei HaKodesh, but in order to create a hafka, meaning to undermine the Iser of Kriya Balpeh, that you're not allowed to read Balpeh. So it could very well be that you have certain laws and regulations that govern Kriyas HaMegillah, or I should say, Ksivas HaMegillah, that are very unique and specific to Megillas Esther. They're limited to Megillas Esther, that you cannot apply those same rules of Ksiva to the rest of that apply to the rest of the Kisvei HaKodesh. Like, for example, there's no writing of Nevuah in Chutz Laretz. You can't apply that to Esther, because Esther wrote it in Chutz Laretz. The answer must be that she's not writing it B'Torah's Kisvei HaKodesh, she's writing it B'Torah's Mitzvah L'Kroso, the Mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah, that would remove the Issa of reading Psukim Baal Peh. He says, therefore, you could be Yotze with Kriyas HaMegillah even if it's not Kisvei HaKodesh. If, again, let's argue from the opposite position. If you're going to tell me that you can only fulfill your mitzvah of Megillah if that Megillah is part and parcel of Kisvei HaKodesh, then you're going to be in deep trouble, because where was Esther located? In Chutz Laretz. So how could she possibly have this Kisvei HaKodesh commitment? The answer is that there's certain dinim in order to engender, to create a Megillah for the purpose of the mitzvah of Megillah, and those dinim do not reflect the requirements of Kisvei HaKodesh. So even if it's not part of Tanakh, it would nevertheless be a sefer, such that you're not reading Baal Peh, you're reading Mitoch HaSefer, and that's going to facilitate your ability to fulfill the mitzvah of Kisvei HaKodesh. David?
The whole reason we have Megillah Esther is that it happened in Hoshlots. If this whole story happened outside of Eretz Israel.
Right.
The whole reason that to canonize is because this story happened in Persia, as you said.
Correct. So now you have a problem, because the rule is Lo Nitna Nevuah L'Kasei B'Chutz Laretz. So what is this Ksiva of Megillas Esther that took place in Chutz Laretz? The answer is that, as far as the universal halacha of Kisvei HaKodesh, you're right. There would be no way, no possible, that she could write this in Chutz Laretz. But as far as the specific status of a Megillah for the purpose of reading and fulfilling the mitzvah of Megillah, and that it shouldn't be reading it Baal Peh, for that purpose, you can have a Megillah that was written in Chutz Laretz. Now we get to the Vav of Aizasa. In what context and under what category does the Vav of Aizasa have to be long? It's mentioned in the Gemara on Daf Tezayin Amid Beis, together with the law of the Shira of Malchei Knan. And therefore, Mashmash Zeu Din B'Mesores Shal Kisvei HaKodesh V'lo Din B'Kriyas HaMegillah. This is not a specific din, a din mesuyam in Megillah, but the Vav Vaisasa belongs to the universal, the general category of Dinei Kisvei HaKodesh. So B'Torah's Kisvei HaKodesh, the Vav Vaisasa has to be a long Vav. Now, as I told you at the outset, the Rambam left the rules that generate, that operate with regard to Kisvei HaKodesh, he left it out. So we go back now to our original question: why does the Rambam omit the halacha of Vav Vaizasa? The answer is because the Rambam doesn't give you any dinim of Kisvei HaKodesh. The Rambam will tell you dinim that apply to Megillah B'Torah's Megillah as it did Mesuyah, but the Rambam wants to leave this out because he wants to tell you that this is a reflection of the law of the Mesorah law, about how the words and the letters of Kisvei HaKodesh should be written. So in the last line, in this paragraph, he says, Haram lo habeas kol ha-Mesorah sheba osios Kisvei HaKodesh. So why is this din relevant? And the answer is, Elo ramas al kulam bevas achas. Oh, he says that there is one Rambam in Perek Zayin Milchas Sefer Torah which gives you a remez of all of them. So now you're asking me, why doesn't the Rambam bring down the halacha of Vav Arucha? After all, that seems to be halacha in Megillah. And if it's halacha in Megillah, then the Rambam should have quoted it. The answer is, says Rav Velvel, from the fact that the Rambam omits the Vav of Aizasa in his Mishnah Torah, it proves that the Rambam understood that this requirement of Vav Arucha is part of Kisvei HaKodesh, and the Rambam omits all the dinim of the Mesorah of the Osios in Kisvei HaKodesh and the Vav Aizasa as well. So here we have in front of us a classical Reb Chaim move in two senses. Number one, he's dealing with the distinction between a din klali and a din mesuyim. And number two, and this is real Reb Chaim, he analyzes not just what the Rambam says, but moreover what the Rambam doesn't say. You remember, for example, the story with the Kfura, and the question was, who should be buried first? So Reb Chaim said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. Why? Because it's not a specific halach in Avelus, it's not incumbent upon the Avel, it's a reflection of the general halach of Ein Over Malam Mitzvahs. And therefore Reb Chaim felt that that was the responsibility of his responsibility as the Rav of the community. So how did Reb Chaim know that the din, that the first person who dies gets to be buried first? There's only a universal halach of Ein Over Malam Mitzvahs, but it's not a din in Avelus. So the Rambam went through, probably took about 5 seconds, he flipped through all the Rambam and Hilchas Avel, and he found no reference to this halach about who gets buried first. Why did Rambam omit it? The answer is, it's just another expression of the general universal rule of Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvah. Mitzvah, you know, called Kodem Kodem. Whichever mitzvah came first, that's the mitzvah. Here also, Belville is analyzing the Rambam in the fact that the Rambam omitted the halacha of Vav Vaizasa. It must be, because it's not a specific halacha in Megillah, but rather reflects the general Mesoris halacha regarding all the osios of Kisvei HaKodesh. Now, I wanted to give you another example of Din Chloli and Din Mesuyim in Reb Chaim, and a sort of parallel example in Reb Velvel. So I'm writing my own chapter of Yeshiva Shita. You know, hopefully Reb Zevin will not be upset with me. So the Rambam in Perek Vav Halacha Hey of Hilchos Chametz Umatzah has a halacha called Isas HaKlovim. So in other words, the Rambam says that what constitutes lechem for matzah, in other words, lechem oni, that you can be yotze the mitzvah of matzah, it's got to be isa min achitim, it's got to be made of wheat, and wheat that's ground into flour, and that's called matzah, that's called lechem. Then the Rambam has a case where instead of converting chitim, pure chitim, unadulterated, into kemach, he adds to the mixture mursan. Mursan are like the husks that cover the grains. And this is called, in the language of Chazal, isas haklovin. This is how they prepare the dough for the dogs. Now, today things are different. So you can buy bran cereal, and they'll probably charge you double because it's made of bran. I mean, go figure that out.
Well, it's a lush, right?
This is right. We spoke about it during Lisha. Yeah. So the Rambam says about Isas HaKlovim that since they feed it to the dogs and they don't eat itself, Ein Yotze Bahem. You're not Yotze the mitzvah of matzah. And this is all based on a mishnah at the very beginning of Masechta Challah, that Isas HaKlovim, when it's not eaten by man, but it's eaten by the dogs, is potter from Challah. And there's an equation here between Matzah and Challah, meaning you could only be Yotze the mitzvah of Matzah with Lechem that is Chayav, that generates a Chiyuv of what? Of Challah. Chiyuv HaFrashas Challah. But the strange thing is that the Ram that we mentioned before says that if you have an Isas HaKlovim situation, then it's animal food. It says the Rambam, Ein Yotzin Ba, you can't use that for matzah. And here the Rambam adds 5 words. She'ein zu mishumeres l'shem matzah. In other words, it cannot be matzah shmura, because you're looking at the matzah not for the sake of the matzah, you know, the chitim that are growing, but rather for the sake of feeding your dog. So Reb Chaim asks, why does the Rambam have to come on to this chiddush and this explanation to justify why Isas HaKlovim cannot create matzah for the mitzvah of matzah? Why do you have to say to Meshumeres L'Shem Matzah? It's like in Shimur L'Shem Matzah. Why didn't the Rambam just simply say it's not Chayav in Challah, because it's not considered lechem, and therefore you're not yotzei matzah because matzah requires lechem? So Reb Chaim says, and again it's a long piece in Reb Chaim, I'm just going to see if I can highlight the main punchline for our purposes to get the structure of the Derech HaLimud The Chiddush of Reb Chaim is that the law that something is, if it's designated for animal consumption, like Isis HaKlovim, you can't be Yotze Matzah. There are two, it hides two different dinim. It's one din, but you smash it into two. Number one, anything that's potter from Chala, you cannot fulfill your mitzvah of Matzah. And this is something that the Ram writes in Pirush HaMishnayos as well. Now what that means is, we're talking about a din klali, a general rule that applies to hafkas shem chametz, shem lechem. So in order to classify and define something as lechem for the mitzvah of challah, the mitzvah of matzah, you must have an isa that's edible to human, its consumption of humans. But if it's designated exclusively for the consumption of animals, then it's not challah. And if it's not challah, it's not lechem. And if it's not lechem, it's not matzah as well. Now we have a second halacha. This is not a general halacha in shem lechem, but rather a din mesuyim in matzah. What's this din mesuyim in matzah? That we need shimur l'shem matzah. Yeah? Oh, are you with me on that? I don't have to explain what matzah shmur is about. Fine. Oh, so Reb Chaim wants to say that the Rambam adds here a specific halacha, meaning the Rambam is not satisfied to apply the universal halacha that which is not lechem, because it's designated for exclusively for animal food, is therefore not matzah. It cannot be used for the mitzvah matzah. The move or the motivation of the Rambam is to set up a specific halacha in matzah, such that even if we could somehow resolve the universal problem, meaning of the shem lechem, and even if we would do so, we would still need to come on to the second halacha that's a matzah halacha. So of course shem lechem, that's relevant the whole year round, and that's derived from the fact that it doesn't have a shem lechem. So, for example, be potter from challah, and also you would make a bracha motzi lechem min haaretz. But here, the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Matzah wants to tell me there's an additional halacha here that excludes this matzah. Not just because this matzah doesn't have a shem lechem, but specifically because of the shem matzah, which has a condition to it that has to have shimur. It has to be matzah shmura for the sake of the mitzvah. The Torah says, "Ushmartem es hamatzahs." So Reb Chaim spends two pages here trying to explain why is it necessary for the Rambam to generate a din mesuyam, a separate halacha that passels the isas haklovim for matzah, minaf gemina. I mean, you know, if the isas haklovim doesn't have a shem lechem to it, and therefore you're not chayiv in challah, then ipso facto you cannot be yotzi the mitzvah of matzah. So why does Rambam have to feel compelled to add the reason of einzu mishumeres l'shem matzah? Alright, so I see it's getting late here and there's a lot more here. I just want to tell you that my goal, and maybe we'll accomplish this goal next week, is to prove to you that this Reb Chaim, operating with two dinim, one a din klali that is mafkia shem lechem as far as challah etc. is concerned because it's designated for animal consumption, and the din mesuyam of matzah, that matzah requires shimur, and the isak lovim doesn't have shimur, that structure is not only typical of Reb Chaim, but also of the Brisker Rav. And that's what I want to try to prove to you next week.
I thought Reb Chaim was the Brisker Rav.
No, Reb Chaim was the Brisker Rav before Reb Velvel, but for some reason, I can't explain it to you historically, when we speak about the Brisker Rav, we speak about Reb Velvel. Reb Chaim had many other, you know, Reb Chaim was not only the Brisker Rav, the Rav of Brisk, he was also Rashiv and Valozhin.
Yeah.
And over the course of time, somehow this name Brisker Rav, which could be applied to 20 different scholars who are all Rabbanim in Brisk. I don't know if you know this, the Bach, who was four centuries earlier, he was a Rav in Brisk. You know, Brisk has a very long tradition of Rabbanim. But for some reason, in our context today, in the yeshiva world, when you talk about Rav Velvel, you refer to him as the Brisker Rav. Maybe because, you know, as a result of the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, Brisk, you know, the golden history of Brisk terminated with the Brisker Rav. He was the last Rav to serve as the Rav in Brisk. So he took on the name Brisker Rav. But there are many, many different Rav.
Was Rav Chaim his father? Rav Chaim of Brisk, was that his
father? Was Rav Velvel's father. And Rav Velvel's grandfather, Rav Chaim's father, was the Beis HaLevi. He also was a Brisker Rav.
Right.
If somebody would refer to the Beis HaLevi as a Brisker Rav, he'd be absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. So the position of Rav of Brisk went through the Soloveitchik dynasty over the last couple of generations. The Beis HaLevi and Rav Chaim and Rav Velvel, and that tradition in the Soloveitchik family is what justifies our usage of the term the Brisker Rav to refer to Rav Velvel. You know, the truth is that Rav Velvel, I don't know if you know this, was not the oldest son of Rav Chaim. Who was the oldest son of the Bechor of Rav Chaim? It was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. And, you know, by right of transmission of Yerusha, inheritance, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik should have been the Rav of Brisk. He should have been the Brisker Rav, not his brother Rav Velvel.